Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Cathode Ray Mission. I'm your host, Adam Ferens, and tonight's topic is the Pacific, which is the companion of sorts to Band of Brothers, which we discussed on this show a few weeks ago. And this series focuses on the lives of three members of the U.S. Marine Corps throughout the Pacific theater of World War II. Joining me tonight is Aaron White. Say hello.
Hello.
Yep. We were also supposed to be joined by Hugh Kenneth David, but unfortunately Hugh was not able to make it tonight, and we wish him well. So, and we'll definitely have him back on the show when things work out. So, you know, I'm going to start with the question I always start with, and that is, how did we come to this episode?
So, yeah, this one was another one that was pretty big when it came out back, 12 years ago now. And I did not have HBO at the time, so I did not have a chance to see it. And then when I bought my copy of Band of Brothers, it was a it had both parts in the set.
Mm-hmm. Well, I saw it when it very first aired, and you know, I was really excited about it because I always liked World War II stuff. And I always like, you know, most of the stuff that Hanks or Spielberg are involved in. And this looked like it was going to be really good. This looked even more ambitious in some ways than Band of Brothers had been. And I think in some ways it is. But I saw it when it first aired, and I was absolutely riveted week to week. So, you know, that's something that I want to actually mention right here. I had not seen the show again until I revisited it in the run-up to this show. And I think this is one of those shows that may actually work really well as a weekly show because it is so intense. I'm not sure how well it binges. But being that you binged it, what was that experience like for you?
See, because of the method of the show, which follows the island hopping strategy of the U.S. forces, I think it works pretty well. I usually watch two episodes in a day and then put it down, no matter how much more time I had. I would watch two, be done with it, usually come back the next day. I think I took one day off at some point. I think I watched three episodes once, whatever. But I do think that it binges pretty well. I wouldn't recommend anybody trying to watch it in one or two days, certainly.
Yeah.
But it's definitely one that you can watch over a week. And I think it binges better than Band of Brothers, in part because it's more uniform in its time. Band of Brothers would range from like 45 to like 90-minute episodes, maybe even 2 hours at one point. Whereas the Pacific was just straight 1 hour, like 45 to 55 minutes, basically.
I think this was an average of 55-minute episodes, whereas Band of Brothers was an average of about 63 minutes. And this, I think, its longest episode was like 1 hour and 7, and Band of Brothers' longest episode was like 1 hour and 40.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
and that's a huge range.
That,
it really is.
And I think that it's a also with, like, I think it's harder to binge things when you can't plan around it. And also, like, 100 minutes can be a lot more draining than 50 minutes, obviously. So I do think that even though in some ways it is more intense material, though certainly at times it's less intense material, that it does binge a little better.
You know, that was something I wanted to get into, you know. In a way, this is a much more visceral series than Band of Brothers. So it seems like you would agree with me. So I'm going to ask you, do you agree? And can you give any examples?
Specific examples, off the top of my head, there is a scene where a man gets hit with a shell and you see him still talking while the rest of his body is everywhere. That's the image that's been haunting me. But yeah, so if you know anything about the two theaters of war, Europe was gross, but most of the really nasty stuff outside of the concentration camps was on the Eastern Front. So the American Army did not face the same kind of all-out brutality that both sides saw in the Pacific.
Yeah, outside of maybe Bastogne.
Right. And that is all represented here. Like, it definitely shows how brutal this war was.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I definitely remember the scene you're talking about, but the one that sticks out in my mind is that there's a lull in the fighting. And they're marching through an area, and one of the characters is occupying himself by skipping stones into the skull or neck of a dead soldier. And I think it's the skull of a dead soldier because the top half has been blown off. And another soldier prepares to take the teeth out of another body. And because of where these two characters have been, for the person that's about to remove the teeth to do that, and for the person who's plopping the stones to do that, as vicious as that guy's been, you even still go, oh, shit. But then for him to suddenly become the voice of reason in the middle of what he's doing and tell that other soldier, no, you don't want to do this. You know, there is both a visual and emotional punch to that sequence that I will never forget.
Yeah, and can we just take a minute because you're talking about Snafu here.
Yeah, Snafu and Sledge.
Rami Malek is a force of nature in this thing.
Yes.
Shows up halfway through it and is in all of the last.
Maybe around, because there's, I think, 10 episodes and he shows up around episode 5 or 6. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he's
he shows
in every
up around
episode
5 after. And this is in episode 7.
And he is just amazing. Like, this is a great actor, one of the best of his generation, and this may be, I'm not saying it is, it may be his best work. Every scene he's in is just filled with the supernatural intensity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is really, 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 really good here. you know, that's no mean feat, being that the man, you know, has won Oscars and Emmys and whatnot. So, you know, I want to ask this question that I always ask, and that is, does the series have any themes or messages?
War is hell. I think that this one more than Band of Brothers, because we'll probably get into this in a little bit. This one focuses in on the lives of three men instead of a whole company. And so you can really dig into the psyches. And you see the way that their mental state is deteriorating throughout it. And these are good guys. Like, you meet them before the war starts. Like, the first, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes of the first episode is before we go to war. And, like, these are nice young men. So, yeah, I think, not to steal Oliver Stone's tagline, but it's just so apt here. The first casualty of war is innocence. War is hell. And I think that really, truly is the purpose of this.
Yeah, I think that's one of them. I think another one may just be the way that war and violence costs relationships and the ability to relate to others. Because, you know, time and again, the bonds between the men, their families, and their other loved ones, and how the war strains that is shown, especially in the first, third, and final two episodes. And that's, you know, what, 4 out of 10 episodes that really hit home on that. So, you know, yeah. I think that's another aspect there. You know, we were talking just a minute ago about Rami Malek, and I was going to ask, is there a standout actor or character? But I think that would be your choice. Yeah.
Probably. He's just so strong. But James Dale gives a really grounded performance as Lecky too. It's Lecky's work that truly drives the narrative here. It's based on three or four books, but Lecky's writings are the ones that really ground it. And James Dale's performance also, I think, really very easily, if it wasn't for his almost calming presence in the middle of the storm.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing. That's something that he was actually accused of, James Badge Dale, when he was on season 3 of 24. One of the complaints was that he was so low-key, but I really liked the way that he played his character, and having seen him in quite a few things over the years, he is very, very gifted at that subtle, low-key acting that some people, I think, don't realize is actually very hard to pull off.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I really appreciated in his performance was that it would be easy to just make Lecky hollow, to take that humor and warmth that he had and then just not show it anymore. but he manages to show how Leckie has tamped it down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, because, you know, all his humanity is still there once he gets out and he goes after the girl he always wanted.
I lived across the street from you for 20 years.
Yeah. The scene Aaron's referring to here for the listeners that may not be familiar is he survives the war, and that's not a spoiler because it says right in the credits, based on these books by, and then you see the three of the books it's based on are by two of the characters that the show follows. And if you know history, you know that one of them is going to be dead at a very certain battle. So, yeah, folks. But this is where Leckie comes home, and he goes across the street to talk to the girl that he'd always had his eye on. And her mother answers the door and says, "Yes, may I help you?" "Yeah, I'm Robert Leckie, and who may I say are you?" "I'm Robert Leckie. I lived across the street from you for 20 years. Is your daughter home?" Yeah, it's a really wonderful little sequence. So, you know, that's something else. excuse me. Do you think that this series works fine alone, or is it best seen alongside Band of Brothers?
So this is kind of the big question for me. Because they're so different. But I think they both enhanced each other. I take that personally as a piece. I think that they're the flip sides of the same coin.
Mm-hmm.
And so... yeah, it's a tough question to answer because the answer is yes, but at the same time, like, you don't have to see Band of Brothers to watch this one. You don't have to watch this one to appreciate the grandeur of Band of Brothers. It just is. Like, they're two separate series, but at the same time, they're the same. And I don't know how to, like, word it in a way that's going to make anyone who hasn't seen both understand what I'm trying to say. Because I think that is just such a unique thing that they were able to pull off.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know if this is quite, you know, final word on Pacific Theater or final word on... European theater, but it's that sort of a thing that we're dealing with here, and they really do complement each other so well because you get the large group picture of the European theater, and then you get the Pacific theater through the eyes of, like, three characters. I mean, there's other characters, but the focal points are three specific characters, like you said, it's very different, but it works as a companion piece. You know, there's literally nobody except historical figures that get named, like Roosevelt and some generals, and, you know, certain other historical figures to give it continuity, but it's a companion piece without being what you'd think of as a companion piece. It's not a spinoff. It's it's a complementary work, I think, is maybe the word that we should use here.
Yeah, that's fair.
But, you know, having said that, again, you know, we keep talking about all this, and, you know, by focusing on these three characters, it seems to me to be more of a character study. And I'm going to ask, does it really work? I think it does, but I'm interested in hearing if you liked that approach or if you would have liked maybe a more macro rather than micro approach here.
I think I preferred this method. If I had a single complaint about Band of Brothers, it was that I would have preferred to spend more time with a handful of characters. Like, the company, like, there was 15 characters we were following. It could be hard at times, daunting at others, to keep them all straight.
Yeah, and you probably would have liked to maybe follow five of them most of the time.
Right. Three to five is really zero in and get to know them. Like, I really, there were times when I really wished that they would have done that. And here they did. And yeah, there's still other characters that you get to know and you get to bond with, but they're not the point. They are side characters. They are not what the story is about. And
yeah, like characters that come in the first two episodes that are only stay around a little while, or characters that come in midway and stay the rest of the show, stuff like that. You know, there's probably maybe, I'm going to say, six other characters that come and go, but they really are very supporting.
Right, exactly. Let's see here. There's 201 actors credited in the Pacific. And three of them, the three characters that it follows, are the only ones in all 10 episodes. So that tells you, like, there's one in seven, there's a handful in six. There's actually quite a few in six. And so, like,
yeah, although really, honestly, though, the one is more his presence is felt once he's gone. But yeah.
Correct. Absolutely. Yeah, and there's the character that dies in technically in what, episode 9, 8.
I think it was
in episode 8.
And for those who don't, I mean, I know it's history. So I'm going to ask you the question here. Should we just say his name because it's history? Or should we not spoil it for the people who don't want to get history spoilers?
You know what? I have a 10-year rule on spoilers, personally.
yeah, fuck it. It's John Bazelon. John said his character, who was a Medal of Honor recipient. So he dies in episode 8, and it's an episode that decides to tell the story of Iwo Jima, where he died, mainly through a follow-up that's him training a group of soldiers juxtaposed with his romance with his wife. And it's absolutely shattering.
Absolutely. I know that I am in a minority here, but I think that not only is it the best episode in the series, but I would argue that the Iwo Jima episode is one of the great achievements in the history of television. Last week when we were talking about Gardens of Stone, I really wanted to say that I saw Gardens of Stone around the same time that I saw the Iwo Jima episode, and Iwo Jima did it so much better.
And so did I, because you were watching it at the same time I was rewatching, and man, you know, it's not to say Gardens of Stone is a bad movie, because it's not, but, you know, and I have to wonder, you know, I mean, if there weren't element, you know, if they hadn't watched Gardens of Stone and said, you know, that's an interesting approach. Maybe we can do it better here. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not saying they did, but it,
yeah.
It would be interesting to know if they. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's Spielberg and Hanks, and I don't know who the director of that particular.
You know, Spielberg saw Gardens of Stone. He and Coppola. So.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I mean, but there's no way to know if they were directly or indirectly.
Right.
inspired. But, excuse me. So, you know, now I was going to ask, was there a single episode that stood out? But I think we just said the episode that really stood out. So, you know, I want to ask this question, and that is this better as drama or as history?
Well, the answer has to be drama, as mm-hmm. we discussed in Band of Brothers. If it doesn't work as drama, it doesn't work. We're not talking about it if it doesn't work as drama. That being said, I do think that this one works better as history than Band of Brothers did. And I think it's a result of focusing in on a more intimate group of characters by taking firsthand narratives instead of an oral history, which always gets icy after 50, 60 years. And just extend it doesn't matter what actually happened because you're filtering it through. That's how they saw it. That's how they experienced it.
Yeah. No, I don't really have anything to add to this one. I'm going to ask, let's see, we've done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, so we have two more of the prep questions. So I'll ask this one, and that is this the triumph of writing, directing, acting, or production?
Oh, man. I'm tempted to say acting this time.
Yeah, and that's not to slight the rest of the show.
No, I mean, the cop-out is to say everything because it truly is a remarkable series. But war writing can be difficult
mm-hmm.
on an intimate level. It's inherently a macro device.
That's why I've always actually said that I thought that Saving Private Ryan, while not the greatest script in the world, is a much better script than people give it credit for being.
Absolutely. Because it gets into the minds of three or four characters, five or six, and it doesn't let you go. But the scripts here are great, and the direction is impeccable, as is the production. But these actors, top to bottom, sell it, and not in easy conditions.
No.
Yeah, I'm going to go with acting on this one.
Yeah, I would probably tend to go with acting. It's also very well directed. There's some nice writing and some excellent production values. But yeah, it really is the acting. The acting really does does sell this. And finally, you know, we come to this one, and that is, where do we rank this all time? I myself have it tied with Band of Brothers as the 39th greatest program of all time on my top 300 list. So what about you? So what do you, where do you rank? Where do you rank it, say, among miniseries and war films?
No, I actually also have it along with Band of Brothers. I have it at 17 all time. My list, of course, is shorter than yours, and I have some things above it that are combined, which you don't have combined. one of which I'm sure we'll be discussing in the near future. this one, and when I was trying to decide if I was going to rank them together or separately, because I do like the Pacific more, enough more that I was like, yeah, I would put it ahead of it. But then I couldn't find a place to put Band of Brothers or the Pacific that wasn't basically the same exact spot. So that's kind of, I guess, where there's a little bit of a spot where.
Yep, that's usually the type of quandary I find myself in on my own rankings when this happens. But yeah, I guess you know that that basically wraps it up. Though we have one or two more things I want to get to, and right now I want to take the time, because usually our show lasts 45 minutes on the shorter shows to an hour and a half on the regular shows. This is going to be a really super short one, folks. So I'm going to take a moment now to give our housekeeping, and that is to say that tomorrow ISF and FNS is going to continue its LGBTQ Pride Month celebration with a commentary watch on But I'm a Cheerleader. That is at 8 p.m. tomorrow here on Deviant Legion. it's a fun film. I mean, and literally that's a line from the movie if you haven't seen it, folks. She goes, wait, no, this, but I'm a cheerleader. Yes, but you're also a lesbian, and that's okay. Are you sure? Everybody says it's not. No, it's okay. But you'll have fun listening to it if you haven't seen the movie. It's a lot of fun, folks. On the 26th, Rock This Town Radio with TC is coming back. Colorado Bound is the topic. And on the 29th, again, another Pride Month commentary from the same folks that are doing But I'm a Cheerleader, this time Cruising. And also on Tuesday, due to recent events that have been in the news, there will be a show on Deviant Legion where a panel of female voices are going to talk about current political events. And it should be quite interesting to hear. Now, coming up on our own show here on Cathode Ray Emission, next week on the 1st of July, we will be having an episode on the landmark classic series, The Honeymooners. A week after that, on the 8th, we will be doing a look at I, Claudius. So that should be lots and lots of fun, as always, especially the Honeymooners episode. Now I want to ask you, Aaron, is there anything we haven't discussed about the Pacific that you would like to mention before we go?
Yes. Give
sure.
Me a second.
Okay, go on.
Melbourne.
Oh, God, yeah, that's a great episode, the one where...
The fact that they took this series, which eased you into the war, but then was high octane for an episode and a half, that they then slammed on the brakes and had the
poor
boys screwing around in Australia, meeting women, having falling in love, getting Dear John letters, getting married, that they actually took the time to do that is one of the reasons that I love this show so much. Because you don't get that in war material. You ease in, and then you're balls to the walls, and then you're done. And it's
the cool thing is that we only get two of the three main characters in this episode, because one of the three main characters doesn't join the fighting until like episode 3 or 4.
Yeah.
He's around, but he's back home, stuck back home, so he doesn't even get in. So half of the characters that we see are those minor characters. So, you know, actually it's interesting you mention this, because we talked about how it focused on these three characters, but you still got to know other characters. And this is the episode, I think, where you really get to know two or three of those other characters, so the supporting cast means something.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, that is something that I think is important. But, you know, overall, this is just a really well-balanced series. I don't think we talked enough about how well balanced it is, and that's part of why I wanted to, you know, you could choose writing, you could choose production, you could choose direction. In the end, we both chose acting. But, you know, on the production end, people think, well, that's how it was put together physically. Yeah, but it's also the decisions that were made in terms of how to tell the story. And that goes beyond the actual script or the director's choices. And this is just such a well-balanced show. Nothing really feels like it got short shrift. And that's quite an accomplishment, especially for a 10-hour miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for a 10-hour miniseries. But, yeah, I mean, if you haven't seen it again, folks, please do yourself a favor, see it. You know, the show's been out since, what is it, 2009, 2010. It's well worth seeing. It's streaming on HBO Max along with Band of Brothers. I think you can purchase or rent it off of Amazon and iTunes as well. There's DVDs and Blu-rays available. So, you know, it's out there. And that's one of the things we do on the show, is we do try to tell you where you can see it, because I want my audience, especially if they haven't seen it or they want to see it again, to know where to find it. Because this is something that deserves to be watched. They all do. But this is an interesting one. This is one of those shows that I wasn't sure how we were going to approach it, but ultimately decided to cut the two episodes in apart, because it just felt like we needed to have an hour or so to focus on this. And unfortunately, with you not being here, this has become one of our shorter shows. But I think we had a really nice, incisive discussion on this. So I will ask one more time, is there anything beyond Melbourne that you would like to add? Because, you know, for me, if it's not Melbourne, it's that last episode where we get to see the cost of war. Beautiful. And that episode, that scene between Bazelon's parents, his brother, and his widow is just absolutely emotionally crushing.
Oh, and Sledge and his brother dealing with their mutual PTSD.
In very different ways.
Absolutely. That final episode is also special. There's, in the 10-episode miniseries, there's the trilogy, and there's Okinawa, and there's Guadalcanal, and there's Melbourne.
Basically
perfect.
Yeah, there's like 5 or 6 great episodes in a 10-episode miniseries, much like with Band of Brothers. So, you know, even though I think these are more memorable than all but maybe one of the Band of Brothers episodes, and that's quite an accomplishment. You know, that's one of the reasons why these are both so high on my list.
Oh, absolutely. It's an absolute landmark, not just of the war genre, but of television and of drama. And
yep.
The war genre also, but not to just put it there.
No, but you know, they're top level works that also avoid being too. Again, I know this. I use this term with Band of Brothers, but it avoids a lot of jingoism. But you know, hey, and that's especially nice in our current climate, shall we say? But again, want to thank you for coming on. Hope Hugh's doing well and on the road to coming back. I want to thank everybody who's out there that listened, or anybody that's going to come to this after it's no longer a live show. I hope you are able to tune into everything over the next few days, and especially next week here on this show. The Honeymooners episode has been in the works since literally the beginning of the show, which is approaching its third anniversary coming up at the end of the summer. So, you know, that tells you how long it's been in the works. Actually, that episode's had to be pushed back 2 or 3 times because of guest availability. So, again, you know, looking forward to finally knocking that one out of the way. So, again, just want to thank everyone involved for listening and participating. And with that, we will say good night. 1, 2, 3, good night.
Good night.